Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to this unheard event on the fringes of the Tory Party conference here in Manchester. We exist at Unheard to combat and push back against herd mentality and to try and promote independent thinking wherever we can find it. So clearly we had to come to the Conservative Party conference and ask the underlying question, the bigger question that perhaps you won't find within the security cordon just a few metres down the road, which is, are the Tories doomed? So we've talked about it a little bit with our panel, and we've decided to expand the motion slightly, because instead of just disappearing down a kind of cephalogical rabbit hole where we argue about how the Tories might or might not perform in future elections, really the underlying philosophical question is, are Conservatives doomed? So the success of the polls of the Conservative Party may be a big feature of that, but it's not the whole question. And so we've sort of opened it out a little bit. I think our panel will have very interesting things to say about it. So without further ado, let me introduce them to you. To my right is Team Doom. We have at the end a face many of you will recognise, Peter Hitchens, who has not attended Conservative conference for, I think, 10 years. Is that
something
right?
Something like that, yeah.
So we have managed to lure him back to discuss the demise of this party. He is joined by Ed West, who is our very own in-house doommonger. He actually literally wrote the book, Small Men on the Wrong Side of History, Tory Boys, which was published last year during the pandemic, and is still available at all good bookshops. On the more sunshiny side of things, those people who think that the conference down the road is not meeting in vain, but there is something to hope for, is Miriam Cates, MP. She is MP for Stockbridge and Penistone, is that right?
Penistone and Stockbridge.
She became an MP in 2019, so has had one of the kind of weird experience of most of her time as an MP, there has been no parliament to meet at. So this is the first time many people will have seen her in 3D, and it's a great pleasure. So thanks for coming. And Matt Goodwin, many of you will know also, another person who has appeared on the pages of Unheard. He is Professor of Politics at the University of Kent, also author of the definitive book on national populism, and is attacked reassuringly regularly on Twitter. So do follow him if you want to watch that and enjoy it as we do. The format will be we're not going ultra formal here, like a kind of Oxford Union debate, but we are going to have opening statements. So I'm going to ask each of you to stand to when you give your opening 5 minute or so speech. At that point, you can rebut what other people are saying if you think there have been mistakes before you, and we will then open it out to more of a discussion between us. And at the end, we are going to do a vote from you, the audience, to see who we think has won the day on this crucial question. Without further ado, let's start with you, sir. Ed West.
I'm actually mic'd up.
You're mic'd up?
All right.
To tell us why the Tories are doomed.
Right, so thanks very much, Freddie. Yes, we are Team Despair and Doom over here, so if you're looking for hope, I'm to the wrong place. So this was basically, this is the subject of my book and probably quite a few articles I've written down the years on what I see as a big seismic shift in culture and over the last 50 years, which inevitably has an influence on our politics. And when the book came out in March, obviously, first week of lockdown, terrible timing. But it's also terrible timing because a lot of people said, well, how can you say that, you know, conservatism is doomed? The Tories have just won their biggest election victory in 25 years. And yes, that does seem paradoxical. And, you know, I think today I saw, I think Matt was tweeting this 135th election lead for the Tories in a row. And it might seem, you know, counterintuitive at the time when Labour seems so unelectable and it's kind of clownish. And you watch the Labour event in Brighton and they're debating the definition of woman and the cervix, whatever. But my basic idea was that, you know, the traditional concept is that people get more conservative as they get older. And I found that when I was in my mid-30s, the people I knew from school, university, and my local area, the opposite was happening. You know, I thought we'd get to mid-30s, we'll all be, you know, joining the golf club and, you know, complaining about political correctness, but it was kind of the opposite. They were much more, on any kind of social issue, they were much liberal, more liberal than they would have been when they were 20. So I saw as well that this was especially true in things like the professions. So like doctors, traditionally doctors tend to be quite conservative, quite right-wing. Much more so in America, but also in Britain now, that's very much the opposite. Under 30 doctors, overwhelmingly left of centre. Academia is obviously like the most extreme example. That was, you know, like 3-1, and now the ratio is probably 15 or 20-1 in some areas. And these are like the children of the natural Tories, the sort of middle class, the upper middle class, people who would have instinctively been sort of the backbone of that. And so the more I looked at it, the same in America, where, you know, there was a big generational shift. People born after about 1975 to 1980, and even more so much later, their views on social matters were much more liberal. And it had a lot, from I think, to the decline of religion, because in Britain, the sort of Conservative Party is so linked to the Church of England traditionally, and also once people stopped having religion. And obviously, religion has been in decline for a long time in Britain, but once now it's got to a point where it's kind of people's moral sense is now their politics. And so politics takes the place of religion, and that politics is kind of centre left. So that's the kind of norm amongst people born, you know, under 45. So the counterintuitive thing is that, okay, the Tories have just won, and because politics is realigned, the Tories have a majority because, you know, the Labour Party has like this kind of solid 25% population who are sort of quite progressive, but it's just not anything like enough to win an election. And they also tend to all congregate in the same constituencies, which are really, you know, unhelpful. So my constituency, which swapped sides 6 times in the 80s and 90s, is now like 75% Labour, which is, you know, really unhelpful for them. But all the trends are towards Labour. So all the groups which tend to vote Labour are rising in numbers, the young, renters, the childless. The more urban people come, the more modern they become, the less conservative they do. It's kind of a trend. And I wouldn't go as far as to say that people say, no, you know, Leave voters are sort of dying out. But in the long term, it doesn't look any sign that people are becoming more conservative. So, I mean, where does that leave the Tory party? I think for the next two general elections, they still have a huge advantage. And, you know, the counter-argument to mine is saying, well, you know, you're talking about sort of the social circles which are very upper middle class, you know, based in London, which is true. It's not representative. I live in, like, the most awful progressive part of London. I'm, like, a complete freak politically. But most people do tend to start to imitate those who are sort of more higher status than them. And so people will start to adopt these positions on most things. Inevitably, that's happened in every society. The higher status people follow their ideology, follow their religion. You know, so the nightmare vision of the future is like, you know, Twitter. Say, Twitter isn't Britain, but I think Twitter will be Britain in like 2030 or at latest 2040. And that's going to be a hell of a place to be.
Depressing.
Thank you.
But fortunately, I don't agree. So, is the Conservative Party doomed? Are Conservatives doomed? Well, sorry to stay on the numbers just briefly, but electorally, no, of course we're not doomed. We're consistently ahead in the polls. All sorts of things work in our favour, boundary changes, the end of the fixed-term Parliament Act, Scotland. How can Labour get a majority again without a serious number of Scottish seats? They're not going to get them anytime soon. But I think also, you talked about the realignment, and I don't think that the realignment has necessarily finished. And you look at Hartlepool, a seat that we didn't win in 2019, that we have won in a by-election recently. And you know, we talk about these red wall voters. Well, I was born and brought up in Sheffield. I grew up in the 80s and 90s. I can remember the hatred of Thatcher in the playground of my primary school. We learnt rhymes about how horrible Thatcher was, how evil she was, and how much she hated working people. And now I was elected in 2019 as the first Conservative MP to represent a Sheffield seat in nearly 30 years. And you cannot underestimate the significance of that shift. Voting Labour was a generational commitment for generation after generation after generation. And now that commitment has begun to be broken. Perhaps the Brexit Party was the kind of gateway drug. But now that commitment has begun to be broken. Who knows where it will end? And actually, there's been a social change in how socially acceptable it is to vote Conservative. So I'm not at all sure that that realignment is finished. I mean, who knows? You can't read everything into one by-election result. But I certainly think that our electoral prospects are not at all dim. And Boris, he cuts through the class barrier. He came to Stocksbridge, steel town in my constituency, been Labour for you know, generations until relatively recently, on the side of a building was "Get the effing Tories out." And here comes Boris to a hero's welcome, people shouting, "Boris, Boris." I mean, it was electric. You would not believe this is a Stocksbridge steel town. And I think, you know, obviously, you know, I come from this place and I've felt the change, but you can't underestimate the significance of this shift in the kind of northern red wall working class vote towards conservatism. So we're not doomed from an electoral point of view. But is conservatism doomed as a movement? Well, I think we need to park COVID, because there were a lot of decisions made in COVID that weren't conservative. You know, I voted against extending the regulations. I voted against compulsory vaccination for care workers. I'm concerned about vaccine passports. But I think we all also we kind of need to just park it as a wartime experience. It wasn't conservative, but the whole of the rest of the world responded in a similar way. And we need to get back to conservative government. And I think there are signs of hope that we are doing that. But the question is, what is conservatism, isn't it? What can we agree on as conservative? Was it Thatcher? And I know a lot of people at party conference see Thatcher as kind of the pinnacle of conservatism, but I don't think she was conservative. I think she was radical. I think free market capitalism actually led to our period of greatest unpopularity, especially in the north, and it created, sadly, some of the inequalities that we're now trying desperately to reverse. So how far do we go back? And I suppose I would settle on a one nation, traditional one nation view of conservatism, about preserving what's good, the good things about our society and our institutions, and having really good social and economic policies for ordinary working people. And that is summed up in the vision of levelling up. What more conservative policy is there than levelling up? It's about giving people opportunities. It's about giving people hope. It's about not a handout, a hand up, another well-worn phrase. But it's absolutely true. And you look at things like the Towns Fund. In Stocksbridge, we've had the Towns Fund. £25 million of government money, but not prescriptive. The community has got together. We've got the private sector, the public sector, the third sector, consulted with the community, decided how we want to spend this money in the way that will best benefit Stocksbridge, both now and in the future. And that's being given the go-ahead. It's a very conservative way of levelling up and giving opportunities. Are all our policies conservative? No, they're possibly not. But do we have a conservative vision? Are we heading in the right direction? Yes. I think there's more we can do. I think we are not doing enough on family policy, for example, a very conservative institution. But on Ed's point about conservative voters kind of naturally dying out, education is the big divide, as you said, in voting at the moment. But actually, one of the things that our further education plan is seeking to do is to re-establish further education or technical training at the heart of education. And if we move away from this obsession with education, with universities and the status of university education, then I think we'll get back to a much more conservative base in future. And if we can fix the housing crisis and get more people owning homes, then again, we've got more potential Conservative voters, so let's hope Gove can sort that out for us. So, yes, we are conservative. We've had a blip in COVID, but we've got great electoral prospects. We've very much got conservative values at the heart of levelling up. So I think conservatism is alive and well.
Thank you.
12 years ago, I think, to the day, weather satellites run by NASA recorded a rare event of global cooling about 200 yards from where we're sitting now. This resulted from me making a speech to a body called the Bruges Group, which some of you may have heard of, in which I said that it would be a disaster for the country if the Conservatives were to win the next election, which was 2010, and that if anybody was seriously Conservative, the thing they should do would be at the very least abstain from doing so, because by voting Conservative, what they would do would be to confirm the putsch which had taken place within the party, led by David Cameron and George Osborne, to turn it into a Blairite formation. Now, my problem with British politics is this. I am a former Marxist-Leninist, therefore I understand what's going on. And those of you who aren't, most of the time, don't. I agree with almost everything that Ed and Kate said, technically, but it completely misses the point about the real nature and direction of politics in this country, which is that the real changes do not take place at general elections. They take place largely within political parties when they're taken over by tendencies. The Blairite revolution is the revolution of my generation and my lot. People like me who were at university in the late 1960s and early 1970s, who then moved on into the professions, particularly education, broadcasting, journalism, the law, increasingly recently even the police, and who continued to impose and introduce our revolutionary ideas into those professions. And of course, they made their way into politics. And in 1997, when the Blairite Labour Party, which was effectively in politics Euro-communist, came into office, finally, the main source of political power in this country, in Downing Street and elsewhere, was aligned with a culture which had gone far to the left, the culture which Ed has described. What is conservatism anyway? What would we be defending if we were actually conservatives? Very few people these days, I think, would be willing to actually confess to being conservative on issues such as the married family. Or to say, as I do, for instance, that the idea that it is preferable for women to be forced out to work in call centres rather than permitted to do the most honourable, important work available, raising the next generation, this is actually not necessarily a good thing. These ideas have long been on the fringe of politics, and many others which I hold as well, and they result from the colossal cultural, educational, social and moral revolution which this country has been going through since the 1960s. One of the principal captures of it was the Conservative Party. And this is the reason for my reception at the Bruges Group, where the temperature of the room dropped by about 30 degrees Fahrenheit as I spoke, because I said this thing. Many of the people there present at the time have since written to me and said that they are very sorry that they gave me the raw prawn. But it's too late, because they did. And there was absolutely no market at the time for any suggestion that what we needed in this country, a point which I made very strongly at the time, was to destroy the Conservative Party as the principal obstacle to Conservative politics in this country. And we now see a country and a Conservative Party in which the heir to Blair, and there really is an heir to Blair now, is one Alexander Pfeffel Boris Johnson. He is the new Blair, and his government is a Blairite cabinet, and everything that they do, although many of them are actually too thick and ill-educated to understand what it is that they're doing, almost everything they do is the Blairite agenda promoted by Peter Mandelson and Alistair Campbell back in 1997. The thing about Peter Mandelson and Alistair Campbell is that they understood it. The thing about this lot is that they don't, and they pursue it for the simple reason that the Conservative Party is and remains the most efficient organization ever devised for obtaining office for the sons of gentlemen. And that is what it is. It has no other purpose. It has no politics. If you rely on it and you say, oh, right, we have a Conservative government in office, therefore Conservative things will happen, then you're living in a world of delusion. But then, as I said, most people who aren't or have never been Marxist-Leninists do live in a world of total delusion most of the time. Sorry about that, but I've just been lucky.
Matt Goodwin.
Well, thank you very much to Unheard for the invitation, and thank you to my co-panelists for setting out some interesting thoughts. And I'm not a Marxist-Leninist, Peter, but hopefully I've got
you
some...
You might be without knowing it. That's the problem.
Okay. I might have something to offer. I want to make two points. The first, unfortunately, is cephalogical. Sorry, Freddie. The second is more to do with ideology. To push back against Ed, I think there is a temptation to believe that demography is always destiny. And if you've been following the debates about politics for as long as political scientists older than me have from the 1950s, there's always been an argument that demography will inevitably favour the left. And clearly, as we can see around much of the world, actually the reality is more complicated. At the last election, for example, the tipping age at which you became more likely to vote Conservative fell from 47 years of age in 2017 to about 39 years of age in 2019. We've seen Boris Johnson and the Conservative Party become, in relative terms, a more working class party, a more non-graduate party than really any previous Conservative Party since before the era of Margaret Thatcher. The north-south divide in British politics has closed for the first time since 1997. And we've seen the Conservative Party branch into areas that the Conservative Party has either not held since the 1950s or never before held in history. These are things that we haven't seen before. And if you look across the Atlantic, we've also now seen a Conservative movement making inroads into groups that we were always told would never vote for the Conservative Party. Donald Trump's electorate was much more diverse than Mitt Romney's was a decade before. We saw the Republicans make significant inroads into African-American, Latino, Hispanic, Asian-American voters, largely because they do not share the aspirations of the progressive, cultural, revolutionary, Blairite type left. So demography is not destiny. And even in Britain, we've got some evidence, and Unheard published it, showing that the Zoomer generation who come to my lectures and seminars are actually not as socially and culturally liberal as their millennial counterparts. It's not to say that the drift will not continue, but it is to say that it might actually begin to slow and things might become a little bit less predictable. Another key point here is that socially, Britain is becoming more liberal over time. But in many other areas, Britain is not actually becoming more Blairite. If you look at our attitudes on crime, on issues around law and order, on issues around the nation, feeling proud of Britain, things like that, actually we've seen some remarkable stability. And the value divide that we talk about in politics today is actually remarkably resilient. It isn't the case that all of the social conservatives or cultural conservatives are being rapidly outflanked by social liberals. It is actually a fairly balanced playing field. But I think the more substantive point here is actually about ideology. I think sort of Peter and Ed have talked as if, you know, the Conservative government is essentially the same as Blair and the New Labour revolution. I just don't think that is true. What we have seen, in particular since 2019, less of it since 2017, is, I would argue, the first serious pushback against a political consensus that has arguably dominated this country really since the era of Thatcher. I mean, things morphed and changed in different ways. I think the Conservatives introduced economic liberalism and Blair and New Labour introduced cultural liberalism. But for the first time, we have a government that is serious about shifting the dial away from London and the graduate class. Miriam has already mentioned some of the key policies, investing in vocational technical education, the lifetime skills work, the adult skills initiative. If you're a non-graduate, there has basically never been a better time to be in the UK. On immigration, free movement is over. We now have a reformed immigration system. Yes, you might say net migration levels remain too high, or they may come back to being too high after COVID, but for the first time in a long time, the era of what you might call loosely mass uncontrolled migration is no longer in place. I think we also have a more assertive a willingness to speak about the positives in Britain, not just cling to a very civic nationalist mindset that talks endlessly about redefining Britishness around multiculturalism, around the celebration of diversity. I think we have a political class that is more willing to talk about the positives in British history. In my line of work, this is the first government that has taken seriously the issue of academic freedom and protecting viewpoint diversity in our universities, which was a manifesto commitment and is going through the House now. So you talk about the domination of, you know, cultural, progressive, left-wing activists. For the first time, we now have legislation designed to protect
gender-critical scholars, conservative scholars, Brexit-supporting scholars, you know, which I think epitomises conservatism as being actually more willing to push back in some of these institutions. International aid is another area that has been changed, something that we couldn't previously touch in earlier years. It was not up for debate. Now it is. What do we want to spend on international aid? Where do we want it to go? Peter talks about family. If you read the racial disparity report, that was the first serious attempt to discuss other factors that contribute to disparities between different groups, including family breakdown. We're now having a conversation about those things. And lastly, in terms of, you know, heritage and history and tradition, I do think we've entered an era where conservatives are publicly rediscovering the ability to actually talk about what is positive in Britain and also in particular within England. I think that conversation is open in a way that it wouldn't have been open had New Labour or the Blairite tradition continued. And it isn't actually, I don't think, a party that is just full of the sons of gentlemen. We've got more Conservative MPs today from a comprehensive school, state school background than we've had for a very long time. The Conservative Party actually now has fewer graduates than the Labour Party. So the profile, I think, of politics, it's not perfect and it's still ridiculously disproportionately dominated by elite groups, but it is beginning to change. And I think that is reflected in our political discussion, not only in terms of what's happening at elections, but also ideologically.
So some big ideas and big themes there. I'm going to have to come straight back to you guys with to respond to that essentially shopping list of ways in which the Tory party has changed. It's no longer just Blair continued. You've heard it. It's a very different beast.
I would say I'm not like, despite my demeanour, I'm not a complete doomer about everything. I mean, I do think there has been pushback because I think they realise at this point, for instance, you know, most institutions in Britain are now so skewed politically that the Conservatives realise you've got to do something. You know, in the past, they had Roger Scruton, they basically stitched him up over some story. But now they realise, OK, we've got to do something. The universities thing, it's becoming apparent that sending 50% of people to universities is an insane idea. It's like the worst, one of the worst ideas imaginable. It has loads of terrible outcomes, one of which is it makes people more left-wing, but I suppose they can't openly say that. And the housing issue is the biggest thing for, because people can't afford housing. It's absurd, the situation. People can't afford the housing. They're not going to have families. They're not going to vote Conservative. So I'm not like a complete doomer about that. My worry is that once, you know, institutions, and if you have that amount of skew politically amongst like professions and amongst the most educated, unfortunately, those kind of people do tend to win most things in life. They tend to win most debates. They just have more power. So the Conservatives can, you know, now the Conservatives are the People's Party. But they are facing, you know, huge opposition from basically the establishment. And in America, the same. You know, the Republican Party, you know, most main, you know, main institutions in America now are overwhelmingly Democrat skewed. Even the army now is basically very highly politicized. We've got very sort of, you know, that's my doomerous things, basically.
Peter, what say you to this? The Tory party has changed and you didn't acknowledge it.
No, there are fig leaves, but the Roger Scruton episode, which Ed mentioned, is symbolic of this. They put Roger Scruton into an empty, futile post and then immediately sacked him from it in a panic when the New Statesman made an attack on him, with the backing of several Tory MPs who joined in the witch hunt. There is no backbone on this sort of subject in the Tory party. You mentioned comprehensive schools, saying that the fact that some Tory MPs had been to comprehensive schools somehow suggested there was no privilege. The Sutton Trust established some time ago that the better comprehensive schools, the ones you get into by living in the expensive catchment areas, are more socially selective than Eton. This doesn't mean anything. And in fact, anybody who defends comprehensive schools certainly can't be a conservative, because comprehensive schools were a device put together by the left wing to destroy conservatism in this country, and particularly to wreck conservative education. The Tory party has never done anything, lifted more than half a little finger to defend them or to defend the grammar schools which preceded them or restore them. And there is no sign in the Conservative Party of any serious conservatism. And if one were to get onto foreign policy and onto defence policy, where the behaviour of this government and its predecessors have been utterly disgraceful, then we could be here all night. No, these are fig leaves. They're not the real
thing. But what about the things that this side were mentioning, the new profile of conservative vote? I mean, you must acknowledge that things have changed in the last 3 years.
Things have changed because of the Gillian Duffy episode, where Gordon Brown was fantastically rude to one of his own voters, and Labour voters began to realise that they were despised by their own party, and particularly the immigration, the whole immigration topic made that happen. And the referendum itself detached huge numbers of formerly loyal Labour Party voters from their party and made them available for the Conservative Party. But that doesn't mean the Conservative Party has become more conservative, does it? It just means the Conservative Party has a larger pool of voters. It means Labour has imploded and is in trouble, and there are voters looking for somewhere to go, and they don't find the Conservative Party particularly repulsive. Well, in some ways, you would think in a proper adversarial country that Labour voters ought to think the Conservative Party was repulsive. What would be the point of it otherwise?
Miriam and Matt.
Let's ask you the reverse question that these guys have said. I mean, the things that you touched on very lightly and sort of passed over, areas where the Conservative Party isn't conservative, such as family policy, that's something you care strongly about. There's very little talk. Morals don't get talked about very much. All of the kind of thing, the sort of more social conservative ideas, they're pretty absent, aren't they? So how can it be conservative without that?
Well, we're certainly starting from a very different position now than we were 50 or 100 years ago. But that's the point. We're starting from this position. And as conservatives, ultimately, we're pragmatists. And I suppose the question is, how do we get from here to what we would see as a more conservative agenda or more socially conservative agenda? And actually, I think a lot of people, particularly in constituencies like mine, have very conservative principles. I think we as a party are very bad at talking about them and articulating what we mean. So family policy, for example, people are so conditioned in this country to a particular taxation system, individualistic taxation system, where it's actually quite hard to form a family. And people don't realise what it's like elsewhere. They have much more family-friendly policies. Now, I think our job as a conservative party is to be much more articulate about what's great about the family, what policies we could have. And people like Andrea Leadsom are starting to do that with her early years review. And other people are starting to talk about these issues. Family hubs, bringing the community together. So I think it's not that people are necessarily not conservative, it's that we've become so bad at talking about those conservative values, so bad at articulating them, that we almost don't have a language for it anymore. And I think we're finding that again. You know, certainly in the work that I've been doing, you know, as I said, with Andrea Leadsom. But it's true, we have got a battle ahead of us, but we are starting from here and we've got to be pragmatic about that.
But would you concede that the Conservative Party is not socially conservative?
No, I'd say it's a very broad church. And unlike in the Labour Party, we are having an honest, open and free debate about it. And there are people on all sides of the argument, which I'm afraid...
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at UH1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Wow. Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
You know, as we've seen from the Labour Party conference last week, is not the case. So yes, there is a wide range of opinion in the Conservative Party, but are we open to those more socially conservative ideas, and are we talking about them? Yes.
Do you think I don't know? Say George Osborne's thing was, you know, he wants to get more mothers back into the workforce. Do you think a Conservative government would say, you know what, we would make it easier for women to stay at home and look after the children, and then go on Radio 4 and then say we think this is a good thing? I mean, because I think these issues are so, like, taboo amongst a certain section of the population, that no one wants to say that, and B, they're like really, you know.
Well,
no man wants to say that.
I agree with you. I think motherhood is a blessing, it's a gift, it is a really important job. I stopped working as a teacher to bring up my kids. I was a stay-at-home mum for a number of years. And I think the problem is that society, not the Conservative Party necessarily, but society as a whole, has reduced parenting to childcare. And parenting is a heck of a lot more than childcare. It's about passing on your virtues and your values. And I think, yes, the successive governments have pushed both parents full-time into the workplace and has created an enormous amount of problems in society. And you're right saying, actually, maybe it's better for parents to stay at home more in those first few years of a child's life is difficult. But these are the kind of discussions that we are having in the Conservative Party, which just isn't happening on the left. So I know it's not a very promising picture, but it's certainly more promising than what's happening in the left. And, you know, and again, when you talk to voters in the red wall, sorry to use that phrase again, but people innately understand this, and people choose family over work. And I think this discussion about getting women into the workplace has been a very elitist discussion, because it's been about women with careers. Most women don't have careers, they have jobs. So if you have a job that you're actually not putting your life and soul into necessarily, is it worth leaving your children in childcare to do that job when you're barely covering the cost of that childcare? No, it isn't. And so many women choose not to have the career, they choose to have the children instead. So yeah, I'm not saying it's an incredibly rosy picture, and there are people, many people actually in our party, on the backbenches who are working to talk about these things. But the point is, there is a debate, it is chiming with people, with voters in the country, and so, you know, we're making progress, which is hopefully a good thing.
Matt?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly think there is a consensus internationally that the political project that Peter and Ed have talked about got a lot of things wrong. And I think that if you look at economics, for example, there's now a consensus that third way Blairism, hyper-globalization came with some huge costs to local communities, especially working class communities, especially areas outside of big cities and university towns. I think there's a consensus that the left is in trouble with what you might call radical woke progressives. I think there is a view that the Democrats should have done much better in 2020 than they did, and that ideologically they're going up a cul-de-sac. They don't have the answers to some of the pressing questions. So the flip side to this debate is if things are doomed for the Conservatives, they should be rosy for social and cultural liberals. And I don't see it that way at all, actually. I think the arguments that are being presented on the other side are deeply detached from mainstream public opinion. And you can see that in the surveys in Britain. Most Labour MPs, for the first time in British history, John May in 1973 came up with May's Law, which was that party activists are the most radical, and party MPs and party voters are the moderates. For the first time in British history, Labour MPs are now the most radical, more radical even than their activists, who last week voted 70% against the AUKUS deal, which was remarkable. And I think we also can see in some of the surveys from King's, Frank Luntz's work at CPS, among others, that the social, cultural, liberal end of the spectrum has become so radical that it is now looking quite threatening to a lot of voters.
And I think that's a huge opportunity, actually, for conservatism to have some of the discussions that we've been talking to. We are talking about, we are actually beginning to talk about family breakdown in a serious way. I mean, I was working with the Education Committee on working class children, which pointed specifically to that issue. And these are very, I sympathize with Peter's point. These are fairly small things in terms of the wider landscape. But the other way of thinking about them is actually perhaps they're seeds that are growing into a different debate, perhaps a debate that we've not had before, or at least in recent history about these issues. You can't look at what's happening around the disparity of outcomes among different groups and not involve the family at some point. That debate is inevitably going to have to happen. And I think it is starting to happen. So I'm perhaps a little bit more optimistic.
So that, I mean, it occurs to me, and just to kind of chime in here, that what you're describing is a party that is succeeding because it's identified a new kind of electorate, but there's not that much that's very conservative about that new electorate. They reject this kind of outlandishly radical liberalism. Doesn't mean that they're conservative, they're just not extremely liberal. They're very comfortable with massive state intervention, massive government expenditure. They are voting conservative, but are they conservative?
I think the new 2019 electorate in many ways is very conservative. Johnson mainly pulled down the red wall because he tapped into voters that wanted to leave the European Union, dramatically reduce migration, were very proud of their country, and were deeply alarmed by the direction of the Labour Party, which they saw as a threat to the nation, which is one of the most conservative views you can have. So I don't think these are a new breed of voters that somehow don't fit on the landscape. I think in many ways they are conservative. But also remember, Freddie, Britain as a whole, I mean, one of the remarkable things about the last decade in British politics is Britain as a whole, there is a liberal drift taking place. I mean, I don't disagree with Ed on that. We are gradually becoming more liberal. Yet the Conservatives have somehow managed still to dominate electoral politics and push through, you know, particularly since 2019, some fairly important things. And that's quite a remarkable.
But that is because they've embraced the liberalism that Ed talks about. That's so they have become what they beheld. You lot are far to the left of Maurice Glassman and Paul Embury and the Blue Labour people in the Labour Party, and you'll stay there. So the things that you mentioned are so trivial and minor, and you know will come to nothing. The direction of the Tory party is perfectly clear. Take one simple issue on which anybody who's conservative must be at the very least highly sceptical, the issue of man-made global warming and the policies which this government has adopted supposedly to combat it. There's no opposition to those permitted in the Conservative Party. It doesn't even exist. It is the principal pillar of left-wing politics in Britain today is green politics. Everything else flows out from it, and you completely and utterly subscribe to what I regard as deliberate national economic suicide as a party. Your Prime Minister constantly prates about it. So you can't really claim to have any conservative elements. Why not just accept that you are a Blairite party and that you've won office and might keep it by doing so, rather than pretending? If you called yourself the Socialist Workers' Party, I wouldn't have anything against you at all.
Miriam.
On the net zero, I agree. I think there's a danger that it becomes an ideology rather than a pragmatic approach to
danger.
To improve the climate, which obviously is a conservative value. But, you know, there are MPs in the Conservative Party speaking out about this and talking about how we need to make sure that net zero is affordable, that we take a pragmatic approach to it, that we take a costed approach to it. And I think you have to look at the Conservative Party as a whole. You can't just look at what the executive is doing. You know, we do have freedom of speech in our party, and I'd like to think that backbenchers at least have some influence on what goes on. So,
what happened to the Whip's office? You have freedom of speech?
Yes, absolutely.
So what happened to the Whip's office? I don't think you do.
Experience as a backbencher is that all Whips are lovely. One of the most conservative returns to conservatism that we've seen in 2019 and beyond, is this the politics of place. And I think one of the things that Blair and successive governments just lost was this idea of the importance of place and the identity of place. And I think that's a really conservative value. And actually, people in Yorkshire, people in towns and villages have chosen to stay in the left behind areas, even though there aren't opportunities, because place is so important. And I think that's a deeply conservative value, to be attached to your place and your community. And that is something that this government and this party is talking about again. That's the whole point of levelling up, that you shouldn't have to leave Stocksbridge or Penistone to get a good job or get a good education. It should be available to you where you are. And I think that is A, a very conservative agenda, but B, will help people to have more conservative values because they see that agenda working out in their lives. And if we have fewer people migrating all the time from villages and towns to cities, that also stops this demographic drift. So I think the politics of place is a very conservative idea and something that is new about this party.
So the essence of conservatism, you stay where you were and wait there where all the lights go out.
Well, come to Yorkshire. It's a fantastic place to live.
Thank you so much.
Peter, can I just ask you here, your plan, as I understand it from your opening statement, is to destroy the Conservative Party.
Well, that was my plan.
I devoted
17 utterly wasted years of my life to trying to achieve it, and then I realised that people didn't want to do it, so I gave up political activism, and it's amazing how much happier I am since I completely abandoned all hope. Pessimism is the key to happiness. If you put any kind of faith in these people and their party, then you're doomed to endless disappointment and misery. But forget it. They're not going to deliver anything.
So can
they have
you
no idea how to do so. It's all over. Enjoy the final years before we sink giggling into the sea.
So there is... So that even if the Conservative Party was destroyed, in your view, there is no route to a more conservative...
In 2010, if the Conservative Party had been destroyed, then people would have realised that they had no friend at Westminster and they needed to create one. But what followed the era of the coalition and then the era of Johnson and the immense confusion of the referendum, I think has made that impossible. I don't also think there are enough conservative intellectual, journalistic or academic resources left in this country to create an intelligent conservative revival. What I fear and have always feared is of some sort of British Trumpism, a loud, raucous, yelling substitute for conservatism, which might well come stamping over the fields once everybody's lights go out and they all lose their jobs and their wages shrivel away in inflation. That's a danger. The Trump thing has always been a danger, and it could come here from either direction, it seems to me. You look at the increasing coarseness that's coming from the Labour Party and their deputy leader in politics. It could easily come from this side of the House of Commons as well. There is, as things get worse, always a danger of fake, yelling populist politics, which leads nowhere but misery. But I place no hope in that, and nor should anybody else who has any sense, because you saw it led with Donald Trump, and we wouldn't want that here, would we? Would we?
So do either of you want to come in?
Yeah, I mean, Peter... I'm not sure where you want to go with the Conservative Party.
Aren't you? Can I not be any clearer?
I'm also not sure the sort of social conservative electorate that you're pointing to is big enough to make that project even viable. I think the art of conservatism is adapting and pushing back when you can, or in the words of Roger Scruton, who you referenced earlier on, is to delay where possible. And I think there are many voters who probably read your columns, Peter, during the late 1990s and the 2000s, watching the New Labour experiment unfold, and who probably do feel that this is a breath of fresh air, given that some of the central pillars of that project have either been removed or have been completely modified. I mean, the era of Britain being a sort of, you know, member state of the European Union, having a much weaker national democracy, having very little influence over its domestic laws and courts, is over. The era of mass immigration, you might argue, could continue if we have leaders that decide they want to continue it, but I suspect actually that won't be the case. I suspect that overall levels will come down because of the third point, which you mentioned, which is factions. And you say, well, factions are really what is all that matters. Well, the faction within the Conservative Party has fundamentally changed. I mean, the Conservative Party now cannot get away with a return to social economic liberalism, because the faction that is dominant within the Conservative Party won't allow it. And that immediately limits the options that Boris Johnson and Rishi Sunak and whoever else has, because they cannot stay in power or continue this period of dominance without listening to what seats like Mirrand have to say, and without actually putting those voters front and centre. I think, you know, in the broad spectrum, that's actually a very positive thing.
Which faction is that?
I think the non-graduate, blue-collar, culturally conservative.
But we actually, Unheard, we did a series of interviews with new intake MPs just before the pandemic, and we never got around to finishing it. But it was stunning how Thatcherite and libertarian they all were. Thought these people from the new red wall seats, we were expecting all of this kind of talk of, you know, more state intervention or cultural conservatism, the Goodwin phrase of leaning left on the economy and right on culture.
I think that's...
We didn't see it.
I think in fair...
Got it.
David Goddard and I have an ongoing argument about who came up with that first. But anyway, and actually, while I'm mentioning David, I mean, you know, you talk about family, and his book, Head, Hand and Heart, is again talks specifically about returning the conversation to some of these issues around family. The Common Sense Group within the Conservative Party has been talking about many of these issues from within the party. I'm not here to say I think the Conservative Party is the best thing in the world, and I'm not here to say that I think this is a fundamentally different brand of conservatism, but I am suggesting that one of the lessons of the last 2 years or so is that I think in some important ways the tide has started to turn, and conservatives are willing to venture into territory that they weren't willing to do during the 2000s and for much of the 2010s.
So Rishi Sunak standing up earlier today and essentially announcing a kind of continuity Osborneitism with importance of maintaining spending, care with spending. It was a sort of homage to George Osborne. Got a big round of applause. Do you think that there's big factions in the Tory party who will resist that?
Well, in fairness, I haven't actually seen Rishi speak yet. But no, I think there are certainly lots of voters who would not feel particularly comfortable with that.
I mean, all political parties are alliances of like contradictory groups. So, I mean, there's always going to be... I mean, I think the only thing I would add to that is that the only one good thing about COVID, maybe the unintended consequences, was that we actually were able to do an experiment about wages and immigration, which for years, you know, the leading economists said, oh, you know, unskilled mass immigration does not affect British workers in this negative way. That's just stupid, you know, populism. And then Brexit is followed immediately by a lockdown, which lots of people leave, and we see wages shoot up. And what Brexit voters have actually been saying all along is like, this is putting down on wages, is definitely true. And that is something at least the Conservatives now can like aspire to, say we can be the high-wage party. You know, we can make family life affordable, you can get a decent wage, we're not going to stand... And I don't think they would have done that if it wasn't for the like the free currents of COVID. I think they would have just probably moved to continual, you know, six-figure numbers, but from outside the EU.
It'll be interesting to see how they create the flourishing manufacturing industry employing all these people on high wages, which they destroyed so systematically in the 1980s. I don't know quite where that's going to come from.
I didn't especially have to. After,
especially, especially after the economic suicide of the COVID.
Well, but people are going to other things. People's wages are going up in every area, and that's...
Yeah, I mean, so prices.
You're sounding rather optimistic. Ed.
That's a good thing.
Yeah. Anybody who sits next to me looks optimistic.
Let's take a couple of...
Okay, yes.
Can Danny Kruger be persuaded to... Is he going to chime in?
So, of course, these guys are right. Of course we're doomed. We're conservatives. We believe we're doomed. What's the point of being a conservative if you're not essentially pessimistic? But you're also right, the Conservative Party is a vehicle for the perpetuation of power of conservatives. That's what our party has always done. But the point is it does so democratically by trusting the people and basically imbibing their prejudices as those change over time and becoming the vehicle of the people. And that's what it is again today. Peter Hitchens decided what he thought of the Conservative Party in about 2001, has written the same article and made the same speech for 20 years and refuses, in spite of all the evidence which we've just heard, that the Conservative Party is different in this generation and since Brexit. So my question to you all is, whatever you think of the state of the party, and I'd be interested in both sides' views, what can the party do to win the next election?
Yeah. We're going to get a summary statement by all four of our panelists, and then we're going to do a vote. So we need you to stick around for the vote moment. Who is going to go first? I think Professor Goodwin, since you were looking like you weren't quite ready to speak.
Summing up.
Yeah. Have you been persuaded by anything that the opposition, in this case, has said?
Only that I might be a Marxist-Leninist. I'm not sure if I am. I don't think I am. No, I mean, I've not been persuaded. I think for reasons that I listed in my opening statement, I think we're on the cusp of quite an important change in the mood music, both in Britain and internationally. And the one aspect of this debate that we've not really got into is actually what does the future hold for the other side? And the sort of assumption that has run through our discussion this afternoon has really been that it's the Conservatives that are doomed for ideological reasons, and therefore the opposition will thrive for ideological reasons. I actually think social democracy, socialism, whatever your preferred term, has run straight into a cul-de-sac with identity politics, and to go to the chap's question on identity liberalism or wokeism, whatever your favourite term is, that no longer has the capacity to unify and unite a country, because it is not a unifying narrative. And the only unifying narratives today that really exist in politics still, as we've discovered during the pandemic, actually, in some ways, are narratives that relate to the nation in some way. And those narratives will always play strongly to the Conservatives, and will always be very difficult ones to outflank for the Labour Party, as we have seen at the Labour conference, where the room for manoeuvre for Keir Starmer is very, very limited because his activist base is so radical. So in answer to the question of what does the Conservative Party need to do to win the election, I think the last slogan was get Brexit done. I agree with Frank Luntz, who I debated earlier on today, who suggested the slogan at the next election should be getting it done, and showing a meaningful return to voters who moved from Labour to the Conservatives at the last election, which I think actually the Conservative Party can do. I'm not in this world where I'm just not seeing the Conservative Party delivering anything. And I'm not in this world where I'm just sort of thinking that actually a viable proposition is going back to the social conservatism of the 80s and the 90s. I think the public mood has moved on to such an extent that the rules of the game have changed, and the Conservatives have done, I think, quite well to adapt to them. So, no, I've not been convinced. I think hopefully many of you have remained unconvinced and will vote for Team Optimism.
Okay. Peter Hitchens, we took you all the way up here to Manchester. Have you found your pessimism slightly altered by this conversation? Are there sudden rays of hope in your perspective?
Good heavens, no. What one wouldn't come to Manchester for optimism anyway, would one? No, I just wanted to go through very quickly a few things. On the green issue, which, as I say, is probably the biggest political issue of our time, the Conservative Party remains entirely in the hands of the Gramscian left, and has absolutely makes no attempt even to argue against it, let alone to depart from it. The effect of this on economy, society, and culture, of embracing this cult is so huge that it would stand by itself as a condemnation of one or two other things. There has been no attempt, now in many years of allegedly conservative rule, to undo any of the disaster inflicted on our education system by Labour and the Tories in the 1960s and 1970s, the destruction of the best secondary state schools in the world and their replacement by a hopeless mess which provides better education to the rich than the poor, but far worse education than it ever did. Nothing, absolutely nothing, and leave aside university expansion. Defence, an absurd clinging to a ridiculous Cold War superpower weapon when the Cold War has been over since 1990 and we are not a superpower, while the actual effective Navy melts away to levels not seen in recorded history, and our army is now rather smaller than the token force permitted to Vichy France by Hitler. These are conservative issues on which the Conservative Party has nothing whatever to say. And ultimately, as I've said for a long time, the Conservative Party would guillotine the monarch in Trafalgar Square if it thought that it would keep it in office. I see nothing. It's not a joke. I mean, they're perfectly capable of it. There's nothing they will not do for office because they have no other principle but office. And if this hadn't been demonstrated before the era of David Cameron, it has been demonstrated since, there is no truly valuable policy that any serious Conservative would wish to see done, which the Conservative Party has not either deserted or actually spat upon in my lifetime. And why should anyone hope for anything else? I think I was accused of writing the same article since 2001. Well, you haven't read them, obviously, because they haven't been the same. They've gone into a lot of detail about the cumulative disaster of this. But the other point that I would make is asked should the Conservatives win? Can the Conservatives win the next election? I don't care. What difference would it make to me as a Conservative whether two Blairite parties, which of two Blairite parties, runs the government? One which has totally embraced equality and diversity and political correctness at all points and greed and dogma, and another which has totally and completely embraced political correctness, equality and diversity and green dogma. Why should I care? Why should I make any effort? I would like to be wrong. Part of the reason why I continue to say what I say about the Conservative Party, that it should be destroyed, that there is no hope, is that possibly people seeing this might realise that there is absolutely no point in putting any faith in this ridiculous organisation, but that that they might conceivably find some hope in proving me wrong and showing that there is in this country enough of the spirit to undo the terrible damage that has been done over the past 50 years. But I see no sign of it, and I have to say, I'm sorry to say, that coming to Manchester hasn't altered that one bit.
Wow, how to follow that. I think you're in the minority in enjoying being pessimistic. And I think most people want hope. And I think that's what actually the Conservative Party does offer people in the levelling up agenda. I know I've said it a number of times. But we do have a vision as a party. We're not carrying it out perfectly. Of course we're not. We're not starting from a perfect place. We've got plenty of difficult decisions ahead of us. But we do have a vision and we do have hope. And I think that is what will draw people to vote for us at the next election. And I don't think it's true that we haven't rowed back on some of the liberalising agenda. When we've stood up against reforming the Gender Recognition Act, Sajid Javid on Twitter last week came out about the science of what is a woman. It's not true that we're not standing up against these things. And you know, I think the Conservative Party will become the party of women's rights very soon. And that's, you know, in some ways, that's quite unbelievable. But I think that is where we're heading, looking at the Labour Party. So what do we need to do to win the next election? Well, I think we've got to deliver. We can't stand up at the next election having made all these promises about levelling up and not actually having delivered some of them. I think we need to be honest. I think voters do understand the economic problems that there are following COVID, potentially with net zero. I think we need to be honest about that. And I think we need to start talking honestly about the family, about family breakdown, about education. You're right, we're not there yet, but I do think we've got the potential to form those policies and to carry them through to the next election. So I am hopeful. We're not perfect, but I think we do carry hope, we do have a vision, and I think that will be enough to carry conservatism through to the next generation.
Okay. Well, I thought I was pessimistic.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here.
I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
But I think next to the pizza, I think I'm mindlessly hopeful about the future. I still want the Conservatives to win, just because they're better than the alternative. You know, Labour believe in equality, diversity, Conservatives believe in it, but yeah, in 3 or 5 years' time, we're just going to slow things down. On my pessimistic side, I think, you know, it's a sign of how bad things are that some of the pushback against kind of this kind of madder transgender stuff, which, by the way, all teenagers are now getting brainwashed with, which is just happening, and I can see it happening now, was by using gender critical feminists as basically a human shield, because, you know, there's no Conservatives who will go out there and use the Conservative argument against this. We have to use other progressives to fight it. That makes me very pessimistic. On the wokeism issue, like, I hate using that word woke, but some of the sort of more crazed progressive agenda, which people do naturally fear, I think it can go on for quite a long time. People can believe quite obviously untrue things for a long time if it doesn't affect them in too much of a bad way. They can still, you know, profess to believe it. The reason that crime never really goes entirely, you know, every kind of radical experiment with crime always ends because you can't really ignore crime. People are getting shot or stabbed in your street. But some of this stuff can go on and go on and go on. I agree with a lot of what Matt said. I think he makes good points about, particularly about the idea of the nation. But, I mean, in some ways, this is a kind of battle between, you know, like the ruling class are basically international now. They don't really have, the period of the great national loyalties is in huge decline and has been since the time of the First War. And there were just economic reasons to do that, to do with the global English, to do with the internet, the global economy. And so the nation thing becomes a kind of like minority opinion. And that's why the Conservatives, you know, increasingly are more of a working class party. But they are, you know, they are set against the kind of ruling class, and that's a very difficult agenda to pull off. So, you know, that's my basic thing, is that you're fighting against, like, the most well-connected, the most well-educated. You go to any elite institution these days, including the top public schools, and, you know, they are woke, to use that horrible word. There's not a single one left, even the military. You know, you have to fight against that, and it's not going to be done, even if you have a majority in government, unless you actually try to win back some institutions. So that makes me quite pessimistic about the future.
Okay, let's. If we put the lights up, I'm going to ask you to vote. There we go. So the motion has been slightly amended. We're not saying, are the Tories doomed? We're now asking the question, are Conservatives doomed? Team Doom over here has made a very eloquent case for how, even though the party may look different, fundamentally it's not conservative and the long-term prospects are grim. Over here, Team Sunshine has suggested that actually they are much more truly conservative than they are getting credit for, and plus, they're winning. So please raise your hand if you think that conservatives are doomed. Okay, I'm gonna try and do that without an exact count, but I think that might be more than half the room. Let's see the other half. Please raise your hand if you think they are not doomed. I can confirm, ladies and gentlemen, that Team Doom has been successful. We came here for hope. We have not delivered it. Quite the reverse. But thank you so much for coming. You found it. It was great to see you. This was Unheard. Check us out on unheard.com.